Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavit Tapley. This past week marked the three-year anniversary of Israel's war on the Gaza Strip. Yet Israel announced that another war on the Gaza Strip was imminent, and to use their words, not a matter of choice and must be swift and painful. In this news analysis, we will examine the possibility of another war on Gaza by Israel and whether this latest threat underlies deeper worries by Israel due to the changes in the regional landscape from the Arab Spring, in which parliamentary results from different Arab countries show a break from the past with Israel.
The chief of the staff of the Israeli army has come out and endorsed yet another attack on the Gaza Strip. Speaking on the third anniversary of Israel's devastating 22-day war on Gaza, which killed over 1,400 Palestinians, many of them women and children, Lieutenant General Benny Gantz hailed the attack as an excellent operation. Gantz, however, added that Tel Aviv must initiate another swift and painful war on the Gaza Strip. The Israeli general said that the war is not a matter of choice, but of necessity for Tel Aviv. Does this mean that another large-scale attack on the Gaza Strip is imminent? According to Gantz, it may very well be. The top Israeli commander says Tel Aviv is waiting for the right time to initiate the war. Israeli forces already carry out attacks on the Strip, both from air and ground, killing many civilians in the process. On Wednesday, Palestinian mourners put to rest the body of a 22-year-old who was killed following an Israeli airstrike. Israel's war on Gaza devastated the besieged coastal strip, the effects of which are still felt.
Israel is ruled by a racist ideology that aims at killing as many native Palestinians as possible. And this has been going since 1948, and this should not come as a surprise to us.
Israel's talk of war does not stop with Gaza and Palestinians.
Democracy will ultimately lead to the end of the Zionist enterprise in Palestine. And
Tel Aviv has made no secret that it is indeed contemplating launching strikes against Iran. One advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israeli timelines are now drawn in not years but months when it comes to Tehran's nuclear energy program. He has said the problem is not military capability. The problem is whether you have the stomach, the political will to take action. Washington remains a diehard ally of Tel Aviv, giving it unconditional protection militarily, politically, and financially. Despite its own terrible economic downturn in years and unprecedented cost-cutting measures, the U.S. remains loyal to Israel and gives it more than $3 billion in annual aid. U.S. Congress has also decided to allocate an additional $235 million to continue development of Israel's missile systems in 2012. Israel's warmongering comments come against the backdrop of increased anti-Israel sentiments in the region, with Tel Aviv becoming more and more isolated. With the fall of dictators like Hosni Mubarak in Egypt and in the wake of Arab revolutions, Israel finds itself in a predicament.
Well, that report ended on Israel finding itself in a predicament, but let's find out what that is and, of course, the regional implications. Let me introduce our guest. Stop the War Coalition, Carol Turner, joins us from London. We have author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley, who joins us from Washington, and from the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement, Mark Glenn, who joins us from Kirtland from Idaho. I'd like to welcome all my guests. Carol Turner, let me go first to you. Israel's latest threat of war on the Gaza Strip, not a matter of choice, must be swift and painful. And to round off the statements of the Israeli general, Benny Gantz, not a matter of choice, but a necessity.
I think that the reason they're making a statement in the way that they are is because they're in a very weak position. That might sound contradictory, but the report of yours, which we've just listened to, highlights two very important factors that have changed in the recent past. The first is the changes in Egypt, which means it's no longer a secure ally. The second is other elements of weakness. And of course, there's a third thing which will be worrying Israel very much, and that is the moves towards reconciliation from between Hamas and al-Fatah. And I think this weakens, this makes Israel feel very weak. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing, because of course, in a weak position, it might be more likely to launch an attack. I don't know whether that's going to be the case or not. I certainly hope not. But I think overall, the tide is shifting away from Israel internationally, and that in the
Okay,
long run,
Webster Griffin Tarpley, do you agree with that? Israel being weak, tide is shifting away from them, and since they feel weak, they feel like they have to wage a war.
I think that there is a good argument that the Israelis are becoming weaker in the sense that their principal military options become less and less credible, apart from the question of nuclear weapons, which remains. I would, however, stress that it's extremely unlikely that Israel would do anything alone. I think it has to be seen together with the United States. And we've had some very interesting evolution on the question of, if Israel attacks Iran, what would the United States do? On the 2nd of December, Defense Secretary Panetta said that such an attack would essentially be a misfortune. It would be the entire Middle East consumed in a confrontation and something to regret. That was December 2nd. But then by December 19th, flying back from Iraq and Libya, as well as Afghanistan, having in effect presided over, he would think, the end of two wars, he started talking about a third war. He was asked by CBS News, flying in the doomsday plane, right back from Europe, if Israel attacks Iran, what will be the attitude of the United States? And Panetta then said, a shocking statement, that that Israel and the United States have common concerns, so there would be a shared common concern. And that sounded very much like carte blanche, the green light.
Okay.
And in addition to this, in the background, we've got an article coming out in the Council on Foreign Affairs, Foreign Affairs magazine, the CFR, and we have one of the principal articles is that it's now time to strike Iran, that it's a perfect time. And I think you can see, if Israel goes first in such an attack, this makes it easier for Obama. It makes it easier for the United States, maybe internally, politically, and also regarding Europe. But of course, if Israel goes first, that makes it harder for the Saudi Arabians and others, say, in the region. The other thing that I think is important is around the 15th of December, the Defense Minister Barak and the security boss Yalon started talking about the overthrow of the Assad government in Syria. And they were very blatant. They were absolutely open. They said it would be a matter of a couple of weeks or a matter of a few weeks. The Israeli calculation seems to be that the overthrow of the existing governments in the Arab world that we've seen this year actually makes Israel somewhat stronger, because the Arab states that come out of this are all weaker. Libya certainly weaker, Egypt I think arguably weaker, and they think if they could bring down Assad, that would help them. So all of this does argue for a kind of a propaganda buildup, which has, I think, military as well as even financial roots. So on the whole, certainly very, very dangerous.
Right. And Mark Glenn, how dangerous is this? If we're talking about countries being pulled in, I think I counted about six or seven countries that are going to be involved if Israel does engage itself with the United States' approval in terms of an overall military plan that they have. And of course, Syria does come into the picture based on one of the focal points of countries, well, in this case, the U.S. and its allies.
Well, the situation is no more dangerous than it has been for the last 60 years. Israel is a dysfunctional, Spartan military state that cannot hold itself together unless it finds itself at war with someone. And so it has to constantly be looking for new enemies to conquer. And I would agree with what Mr. Tarpley had to say. These revolutions that have taken place have not made Israel weaker by any stretch of the means. It has made Israel stronger. They are all destabilized. They are confused. They are scurrying about. And particularly with the situation in Egypt, Israel has been bristling under this Camp David peace accord since 1979. And the fact that Israel was forced to give up the Sinai Peninsula to Egypt. And so Israel has long been looking for an excuse to reignite tensions with Egypt, war with Egypt, in order to reclaim that resource-rich country, which she considers to be, biblically, part of the land that God gave her. So we should dismiss this idea that the revolutions have made Israel weaker. She thrives on war. It was Mordecai Vanunu, the former Israeli nuclear technician, who told me personally in an interview I did with him a few years ago that Israel has to have war every 10 years or so in order to hold together what is organic and organically fractured society.
Carol Turner, when you hear about this, I mean, really, you represent Stop the War Coalition. I mean, we're talking about this scenario that is being played out by Israel involving the U.S. Of course, these are just scenarios at this point alleged. But, I mean, isn't this dangerous of what it can do to the region when you have these countries that, for one reason or another, as we talked about some of them, want to engage in war of such depth?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The fact that my own personal view is that for a number of reasons, Israel is weaker, doesn't at all mean that it's any less dangerous. On the contrary, the fact that it recognises a loss of status and support by the international community and shifts in the regional situation make it more dangerous, more likely that it could act either deliberately or accidentally outside the control of the United States. I agree with the point that was made just now, which is that Israel is very dependent on the US. That's completely true. But it doesn't rule out accidental issues and responses which trigger a conflict. The opinion of Stop the War here in Britain, watching the situation in the Middle East in its complexity, is absolutely clear that it is more dangerous, more likely to see a war situation than we have been in the past. And there are three reasons for that. The first is the Israel-Palestine conflict and the position of Israel, which is what we're talking about tonight. The second reason is Syria. It's absolutely clear that the West is attempting to engineer another regime change. And the fact that it's taking further aggressive steps towards Iran. It's clear in the case of the section of the American right that their view, which I've seen explicitly in a number of publications, their view is that the road to Iran is via Syria. And I must say I'm rather inclined to take that point of view very seriously. I think there are a number of conflict points which could trigger all sorts of situations which would be very extreme and which could lead to Israel taking action outside the control of its main ally.
Okay, Webster Griffin Tarpley, let's look at the statements made by this Israeli general. And I'd like to pull the part that he says, Israel is looking for the right time to launch a war against the Gaza Strip. When do you think he means by this being the right time? And if the right time comes about, does that mean that's going to kickstart maybe the other countries that are involved then in terms of their regional pursuits, Syria to be one of them, and then maybe Iran?
I think what General Gantz of the IDF says is incomprehensible in its own terms. What is the great threat coming out of Gaza? I really don't see it. Rather, it seems like the desire to goad or provoke other states in the region to respond to another orgy of killing on the model that we saw 3 years ago, right? And the interregnum between Bush and Obama, there was this, of course, huge attack on Gaza with, 1,500 dead on the Palestinian side. I think to try to do that again today is really an attempt to try to get somebody to respond and then use that as a pretext for something else. I would also point out, though, that I think the timing really goes far beyond Israel. We've just had the British government saying that they believe that the euro is about to collapse. And I think when the British government says they believe, they mean they want, that they're working hard to collapse the euro so that the pound could remain the last man standing and the euro could go down. However, people in Wall Street, Washington, would say, well, if the euro goes down, that might be good for some people, for the dollar and the pound in the short run. But the obvious thing that would follow then is that the dollar would be sucked into the vortex of the euro collapse. Now, the connection to the Straits of Hormuz is pretty obvious. There's a group in Wall Street that wants the closure of the Straits of Hormuz. They say that's the only way to save the dollar. If you have a war involving Iran, we've just had these statements, maybe contradictory, but it's pretty obvious that the maritime traffic through the Straits of Hormuz is not going to be facilitated by a war, rather the opposite. And if that happens, if that oil is cut off, right, it's still a large part of the world market of oil, the price of crude oil might go to 200, 300, 500, nobody really knows. And that would be the only way to save the dollar in extremis, by creating a huge artificial demand for dollars to soak up the dollar overhang and to prevent a flight out of the dollar. We've also just had the Chinese and the Japanese getting together and saying that they're going to eliminate the dollar from their bilateral trade. That's another big blow for dollar banks that have been skimming off that trade in recent years. So I think if you keep your eye on the dollar and the fact that from a purely financial, not industrial or consumer point of view, but from a purely financial point of view, a cutting off of that oil would actually be the salvation of the dollar, at least in some kind of a Wall Street perspective. This may indeed be what the Israelis are talking about, because this is what they are attuned to as well.
Well, but then the other side of the coin, Mark Glenn, I don't want this to be just about Iran here. It's going to obviously have repercussions. Iran has indicated in its defense doctrine, of course, what would happen if they were offensively attacked. But let's look more about the Israeli alliance with the United States in terms of what the United States wants. Basically, do you agree that they want to replace these independent regimes to be basically client ones? And when Israel talks about war, perhaps they want to show, based on what experience they had also in Libya, NATO, and the countries involved there, that we need to teach a lesson to some of these countries, and therefore a war is something of a necessity to teach them that lesson, the countries in the region. And of course, I'm talking about MENA, Middle East and North Africa.
Well, I think that what we have to understand, we have to get in the frame of mind of understanding that Israel is an empire. She has empirical ambitions. She's not just simply satisfied with possessing a small sliver of land on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean. She sees herself in the future as being not just the dominant power in the Middle East, but the dominant power in the world. We have to understand the religious underpinnings of this entire Zionist project, which basically says that they are going to dominate or control all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers. And so the only way to bring this about in a very productive way is destabilization of these various countries, whether it's North Africa, whether it is the Middle East itself, is to keep them destabilized and constantly trying to find their footing so that they can maintain their bearings. And so war is an excellent way of achieving this destabilization and of furthering this narrative that eventually, you know, Israel, because of her dominance in the region, that it doesn't do anyone any good in the region to stand up to her. This is what we have to understand. We're not dealing with a rational, sane player here. We're dealing with people who are driven by fundamentalist religious feelings, sentiments, whatever you want to call them, that are completely out of the what we would consider to be the mainstream thinking in the 21st century. They are essentially trying to drag the world back 4,000 years to a period of time where they envision themselves as being, you know, the inheritors of this great state in the Middle East. And so war is an excellent way of bringing this about. It has always worked for her in the past. There's no reason why she would not use it again in the present and in the future. And it is a very dangerous situation for the entire world. But again, you know, it's not as if we didn't have warning about this. Even the United States State Department, they were warning Truman at the time not to recognize Israel because it would have repercussions that would last well into the next century. it would be a disaster. It would, in fact, there were some who even predicted it would lead to the downfall of the United States if the United States threw her chips in with Israel. And clearly, this is what is happening now. The United
States. Let me bring in Carol Turner. I apologize, Mark Len, to get a reaction before our time runs out. Carol Turner, I mean, when we talk about the United States, when we talk about Israel, I mean, both are facing internal problems when it comes to protests within both in the United States and recently in Israel. Is this a way for them to distract their general public by being involved and engaging themselves militarily in the region?
I'm not so sure about that. I think it's a bit more complex. I'm not so sure Obama would want to launch some offensive action that could lead to a regional confrontation in a run-up to the election. I'm not at all sure about that. But what I do think, if I can comment on the last statement, if I may, is that that America, the creation of Israel, was in support of America's project in the Middle East. Israel acts, if you like, to put it in oversimple terms, Israel acts as an arm of American imperialism in the Middle East.
A nuclear arm.
Relationship.
While it's nuclear arms.
Yes, exactly.
I have to add
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. A nuclear arm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that remains the relationship. I think I'm right in saying that the aid which comes from the US to Israel represents more than one-fifth of the Israeli budget. That's a huge amount of money.
Right. And I'm sorry to jump in. I need to get last statements in for since we're short on time. Webster Griffin Tarpley, Russia is not going to stand by, is it? Tell us what's going to happen in terms of them. And, of course, what the United States seems to be doing is moving up along to the shores of China.
Well, the obvious thing is that Syria, in all of this, Syria is a frontline state, right? They share this border with Israel, and we've got these statements from Barak and Yalon that Assad has to be overthrown. So essentially, he's joining in the destabilization of Syria. The Russians have sent or are sending their battle fleet to the eastern Mediterranean, at least a significant part of it at Tartus. They've sent the Patriarch Cyril of Moscow about a month ago. So there looks like there's at least a pattern of support. We're also told that there's a kind of an agreement with China and indeed Iran to back up Syria economically. So the big question is, if the destabilization of Syria doesn't work, what will be the next step? An attack by Turkey as a NATO proxy or something else? So all of that, I think, factors into this. I would also add the idea that Obama makes these decisions. I just don't see that. Obama is more spaced out than he's ever been. He essentially does his election campaign and not much else. The real decisions are made by these people like Panetta, Hillary, Donilon at the National Security Council, and General Petraeus. And I think this is a very aggressive group right now. And
right.
We do have Panetta saying, essentially, carte blanche, if the Israelis go first, the U.S. will follow. And I think that's a really shocking thing. A real American administration would say, Israel, back off.
Okay.
Don't do this.
I'm sorry, I have to jump in here.
Don't drag us into some war.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time. I do appreciate that. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian from Washington. Thank you so much. Stop the War Coalition. We had Carol Turner, and also from the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement. Mark Len, thank you so much. And thank you for watching another edition of Press TV News Analysis. And emails, suggestions, newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Vitahoy and the entire team, it's goodbye.